RadioInfluence.com. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Welcome in, everybody. This is the Landry Football Podcast for this week, Thursday, February 27th, talking to you from the Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. Excited to be here, excited to be talking with you here, and we're going to get into a number of things related to the details at the Combine, as well as some of the things that you're hearing, and putting it in perspective. It is always this time of year, not so much misinformation, although there's quite a bit of that, but there's a tremendous amount of misinterpretation of the information, and I deal with it every year. I am the angry man, get off my lawn guy this time of year. For those of you that are not aware, I ran the Combine for several years, was part of starting it back in the day. There have been, this is the 38th Combine. I've been to every one. There is a reason why we're here. There is a process of evaluating. And we're going to talk a little bit about why some of the things matter, but they don't mean what some of the talking heads mean. Now, here's the thing about the Combine in today's world. We've gotten to the point where everybody has to have an opinion on everything, right? Now, it may be somebody that doesn't know their head from their ass on what they're talking about. That's okay, just as long as you have a hot take. And so you create a lot of misinformation and a lot of misinterpretation of what goes on. So we're going to get into some of the metrics of what they mean, why they are important, but what it actually means as it relates to evaluating a football player. A little bit of knowledge can be very dangerous. So we're going to try to take you to a different level. But one of the things that's interesting, on top of everything that takes place at the Combine, and there's a lot. Of course, there's the workouts. Let me tell you that the reason why we started the Combine, and the most important thing about the Combine, is the medical physicals. Always has been, always will be. The top five things of importance at the Combine. Number one is medicals. Number two is medicals. Number three is medicals. Four is medicals. Five is medicals. Okay? I get it. It's not the popular thing. It's not what people talk about a whole lot. The workouts are the least important thing. After the medicals, you know, the psychological testing is important. The face-to-face interviews used to be more important than they are now. The face-to-face interviews, when I was running it, teams could have players for a lot longer. Now, because they've got all other things with the media and whatnot, media wasn't allowed in. And no disrespect to the media or the public, but I always believe when I was running the Combine, this is a work environment. You don't come into the work environment. We're here to evaluate players. We're here to do a lot of investigative work on players. We're here to get a lot of information, and we're not here to, you know, coddle or promote the media and the fans of it. But in the modern day world, where you've got an NFL network and an NFL radio network, there's content that's needed. And let's sell this. Let's get people to click and make money. So it doesn't matter that it's misinformation. It doesn't matter that we may negatively affect some of the things that you try to get done from a football standpoint. What's important is let's make a few bucks and let's get people interested. Even if it's misinformation, they're talking about us, right? So anyway, don't mean to sound bitter, and I'm not bitter, but it just is just the way it is now. When I was running it, there was we had a lot of people requested, hey, let's open it. And I always said, no, we're not doing it. But then the NFL network came about after, and that changed things. So that's that. We still get a lot of work done. But because of the fact that it's become more of what I call a dog and pony show, it has become a little bit different in terms of how the information is analyzed, because the people analyzing it are media folks who don't know. Ex-players don't know why we do certain things. You don't have a lot of people that have a lot of experience in personnel talking about it. So, therefore, you get a lot of misinformation. So, anyway, the medicals are the most important. The psychological testing, certainly have workouts. All the tangible measurements are important. And there are other things, NFLPA meetings, orientations, things of that nature that are really important. But the other part of what takes place is obviously it's the start of free agency begins on March 18th. With agents here for their convention, personnel director meetings that are taking place, general managers have their meeting, you have head coaches have their, I mean, trainers, video directors, everybody has their convention, so everybody's here. And with that, you have an opportunity for agents and representatives to get together and discuss a lot of contract issues related to re-signing a player, releasing a player, moving on from a player. Maybe there's a player that may reach free agency in a couple of weeks, and the parameters, all those little deals are being discussed, and there's a lot of news and information coming out of it. On top of all that, which is typically normal in every combine week, we've got an unusual added nugget, something on the agenda is maybe the best way to describe it. And that is the new CBA or the CBA talks. It's not new yet. It is new, but it's not done yet. And we've talked about it over at LandryFootball.com. We've gone into a great deal of detail, and we've gone to it on this podcast before. And look, there is a movement to have a change. The new CBA's got another year. The league would like to get it done now to prevent any work stoppages. That's understandable. But what's going on right now is a little bit of a discussion from ownership to Players Association about the best way to go forward with a new CBA. I do think that there's some concerns by veteran players having a 17th game. And, you know, they're the league ownership, and this is why these things take place. And you hear me gripe about not enough time in pads and development. All those things are true. And this is part of the decisions that are being made that are not for the best interests of football. They're in the best interests of football business, money making. So the things that actually help behind the scenes make your football team better are not adhered to. What's important is, say, we're going to put another game, as crappy as it may be, on the schedule, and we're going to make more money in Georgia for it. We're going to take one less, quote-unquote, meaningless preseason game, except it's not meaningless. It's essential in developing your team. And, oh, we're going to take away practices because you can't make money from practices. You know, it may hurt your ability to, again, develop your team, but, you know, what does that matter? We're trying to make money. So the players, the veteran players, are not all that interested into an extra game because the extra money that's going to come with it is not going to be that big of a deal. The players' salaries are divided up in 17 weeks currently. Yes, 17 because everybody is a bye week. So it'll be divided into 18 weeks going forward, including the bye week again. The money will be increased for each player. The player pool will be increased because you've got an extra game, which you can get more money from television. You can also get more money with an extra playoff game as they're going to add or proposing to add an extra playoff team in each conference. That's more money. But for the guys that are making top-level money, it's probably not worth it. But for most of the guys from, say, middle of the roster and definitely bottom of the roster guys, they're intrigued by this because that's more money in the pie. And so all of a sudden, their average salary might increase by $150,000 a year. That's big money to somebody that is on the bottom end of the roster. So I still think the deal is going to get pushed through. But it's like any negotiations. All right, well, we're good with this, but we need that, something totally unrelated, but you push it through in the CBA. And that's why when you look at the CBA, you say, they agreed to what? Why did they do that? Well, because in order to get A, B, and C, they had to kind of maybe sacrifice X, Y, and Z. Nothing is definite. We'll let you know. Here's the most intriguing thing that's coming out of it. As we speak here today, it is the first day that you can begin to tag a player. But they've extended the deadline into a couple of more days and can extend it even further on the deadline to put a tag on a guy. Right now, we don't know, are we going to have the typical franchise or transition designation, or we're going to have both? We don't know. And teams don't know. So teams are trying to figure out how they're going to deal with it. They got to be prepared. So people, how do you deal with it, Chris? Well, you have to, in this case, got to be prepared for both. Here's what we do. If it's one tag, here if it is, if we're need two tags. Those are things that you look at. So if you're the Cowboys, for example, just to throw them out, they will likely tag Dak Prescott. Doesn't look like they're making progress on the deal. Perhaps they will. They could put the franchise tag on him. And then if they wanted to, put the transition tag on Amari Cooper. There's some risk in losing them. But again, they have a – basically would let the market dictate it. And they could protect both because you can – you've got an option to keep a guy if somebody comes after him. So it's a way to keep a couple of folks. If you only have one tag, then you're going to have to – you're going to unprotect one of them. So there's some strategic issues that are in flux because we don't know the rules yet. So we're going to keep you up to date, obviously, here. And for all the latest in between these weekly shows, you can go to LandryFootball.com to get the latest in our notebooks so that we can we'll keep you up to date on what's going on and what does it mean. But we've got a lot of that taking place. We have a lot of discussions about where guys could be headed. Where is Tom Brady headed? There's a lot of talk that, boy, it doesn't look like he's going back to New England. And listen, I don't know. I don't know where the options are going to be. I think there'll be people that are going to be intrigued. Who's going to be willing to make the offer? What he's going to be willing to play for? What type of situation is he looking for? Is he looking for just a chance to go compete somewhere outside of New England? Is he looking to go, you would assume, to a place that maybe has a good chance to win and compete? How does he look and view New England's current situation as a team? He certainly has to weigh that versus his relationship with the owner, Bob Kraft. Maybe the desire, ego-wise, by both Belichick and Brady to prove that they can win without the other could be in play. All of that is kind of mixed into a stew to try to figure out where this is headed. In New England, got a couple of key components on the offensive line that's in flux. You've got longtime offensive line coach Dante Scarnecchia, who has been instrumental in their success in protecting Brady. He's retired for the second time, and it looks like for good. So how well can they protect him? We know the receiving weapons are limited in New England. So how does he feel about his chances of winning in New England? We know that there were limitations by that team in the playoffs, and I think to some degree during the year we saw it kind of developing along those lines. But can they make enough inroads and improvements this offseason to make Brady feel like this is his best way to contend? What are the other options? Does he want to go to Tennessee with Mike Vrabel, John Robinson, guys that he's at least familiar with? Does he feel that team is maybe the difference? Does he want to go there and lead them? Maybe that intrigues him. I don't know that does he want to – talks about where he wants to live. I don't think Brady cares about where he wants to live. I think they've got their dream home. I think they've got their places that they've got set up. They've got multiple houses, he and his extraordinary wealthy wife. That – he's got plenty of time to live where he wants to live. I think right now it's the competitive juices for one more year, two more years, to see what he can do. Maybe do it somewhere else. Maybe do it again in New England. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I don't think it's just a talk and hype and, you know, to sell that Brady won't be there. It's hard for me to envision him not being back in New England. But really, when you study it and look at it, there's a lot of reasons why he would want to go somewhere else. What would the Raiders be willing to offer him? Is he comfortable there? What would the Chargers be willing to offer him? Is he a factor there? I don't know. What about Tennessee? I don't think it's a great fit in Tampa, but what about there? I mean, where would they be the type of interest? Is there somebody else out there that he might be interested, that he feels that he could make a difference, that maybe could put a team over the top? And maybe putting his team in contention, if not winning a championship, is that something that privately he'd like to do and show, yeah, look, that's me. I think he'd like that. But you know what? At the end, it's still difficult to leave. And I know there's going to be a plea by Robert Kraft to keep him and to want him to stay. But how much does Bill Belichick woo him, if at all? What does that mean? A lot of dynamics. There is no doubt that a Brady free agent offseason moves the needle big time. And I'm not a move the needle type person. I'm more of the building and the nuts and bolts of the team. But I admit, this is really intriguing. I don't think Tom Brady, whether it's with the Patriots or anyone else, is probably going to win another title. I don't think it's going to have the type of impact on the field in terms of winning titles that people think. Now, I'm going to, I don't know where he's going to go. He's not going to put the Raiders or the Chargers over the top in the West. I think he could help the Titans. That may be the team that's maybe most intriguing, but I don't know that he puts them over the top. I don't know that they become the favorites over Kansas City. But again, where might the possibilities be and where he ultimately might decide who's willing to pursue him? Is there going to be a sleeper? You know, how does New England stance of letting him go versus all that is very, very intriguing. But there's no real answers. Now, I am starting to get a strong sense here in Indianapolis that this is where Phillip Rivers, it's certainly the favorite to land Phillip Rivers. A quarterback that can still play, a team in Indianapolis that I think likes Jacoby Brissett, but not sold or married to Jacoby Brissett in the future, still to be determined. But they're not in a position to get one of the top quarterbacks in this draft. Maybe get one that they like, but not someone that can lead them in the short term. A team that has been built more soundly than they built around Andrew Luck under their previous GM, Ryan Grigson. They've done a really good job, Chris Ballard has, of putting together a very good roster, a very good offensive line that can run the football effectively, protect Phillip Rivers, which if you don't create a clean pocket for Phillip Rivers, there's no chance. If you do create a clean pocket, he can be very successful. It's a team that's got a pretty good defense, that's well coached. Phillip Rivers might make a difference on a team like Indianapolis in a division where you've got Houston that and Tennessee that are good. You've got Jacksonville that's trying to figure some things out, but it's a competitive division. And it certainly would give the Colts a really good chance of competing near the top of the division. So that makes some sense. It makes sense for Phillip. And people say, oh, well, now he wants to go into Florida. He's moved his family to Florida because that's where he's going to retire. And he's going to retire in a year or two and on a year-to-year basis. But these guys live in a different world, folks. He's got his built or bought his dream home in Florida, he's going to buy, rent, whatever he wants to do at wherever he plays. I think it's different. I think he would be very comfortable in Indianapolis. I think he'd love working with Frank Wright. It makes the most sense. It certainly makes more sense for what they're trying to do than it would in Tampa or Jacksonville or other places. But we shall see how this may play out. But that's kind of the news going around the league. The other thing that has kind of been talked about that came up within the last 24 hours is, man, did you hear that the Redskins are going to interview Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa? man, they're picking number two. And it's like big story. It's not a big story, and I'm going to explain why. But it is, oh, my God, they drafted Dwayne Haskins. What are they doing? Oh, they're going to trade Haskins. They're going to trade the pick. They're going to do this again. All these extrapolations, again, from people that really don't understand how things work behind the scenes. So let me just take you through it. When you're at the combine, you interview as many players as you can. Okay, you try to get as much information on a lot of folks. A lot of it depends upon a lot of players that are at the combine you've already interviewed and spent a lot of time with at the Senior Bowl or the East-West game, so they're not as big of a priority. The other guys are, and remember, they're coming in cycles, so you're not choosing amongst 300 players to interview. You're interviewing just a finite number of players each and every day because not everybody's in. So everybody's in there 2-3 days, so you got plenty of time. And if you're the quarterback coach, your job is to interview as many of these quarterbacks as you can. You're going to interview as many running backs as you can if you're the running back coach, so on and so forth. Who's interviewing? What's the level of importance? Secondly, when you're interviewing certain key players, like a Burrow, like a Tua, it helps you for a couple of reasons why you want to interview as many players as you can, because you don't know what the future holds. One of these guys, or any, not maybe not these guys specifically, but possibly, one of these guys may be free agents in 5 years. This is part of the intel, the book that you're building on the player as he gets into the league. It helps you to learn as much as you can as you go forward with his pro career. That's the one thing. Two, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what options may come about. You don't know if somebody is willing to throw an unbelievable offer because they're in love with Dwayne Haskins and are willing to give away the farm for Dwayne Haskins. At that point, in order to make that decision, you will need to know everything you can about Tua or Burrow, whoever's there at two, because one of them will be, one of them will not. And, you know, it's a possibility, I guess both could be, but, you know, mathematically it could be, but unlikely, realistically not. Are you ready to pick one of those guys if you had to? What if, and I apologize for saying this, what if something tragic happens to Dwayne Haskins? What if we saw Kobe pass away? You don't think about these things happening. You'd never want to talk about it, but I kind of have to explain the point. When you're in this position, you don't ever know what's going to happen. Somebody gets in a car, any of us, and we don't know what the future holds. You know, somebody could die unexpectedly. We don't know what's happening. Are you prepared at that point to take a quarterback if you need one, if all of a sudden Haskins, something tragically happens? Those are things. But let me tell you the biggest reason why this is done, okay? You interview the guys for all the reasons I mentioned. You make sure that everybody in the media knows that you're interviewing Burrow and Tua for strategic reasons. Folks, when you're in the draft, you know, and let's look at the top of this draft. You got the Bengals at one, of course. You've got the Redskins at two, the Lions at three, the Giants at four, the Dolphins at five. We know that at 5, 6, and 7, those are three teams that need a quarterback. We do not know how they like the quarterbacks in this draft, how sold they are on Burrow and Tua and, say, Justin Herbert, or do they see a lot of difference between Herbert and Jordan Love, for example. All those things are going to be individualistic. But the Dolphins, the Chargers, I think going forward, the Panthers at 7, the Jags at 9, Raiders at 12, the Colts at 13, a lot of folks starting at 5 with the Dolphins that are needy at quarterback. Of course, the Bengals are at 1 as well. Why do you think you've had strategically put out there in the media by the Giants, we're open for business at 4? You know what that is? Give us a call. We might like to talk. Somebody that wants to move up for a quarterback might need to move to 4 because maybe to move ahead of the Dolphins. So the Dolphins may need to move up because you put that seed in that you're interested. Well, if at 4 they're open for business, you think number 3 better? Well, all of a sudden number 3 is, well, we're committed to Matthew Stafford. They're saying all that, but they're also saying, man, we're looking at the quarterbacks. We like these quarterbacks. Basically, they're saying, if you want to secure your quarterback, you better come to us at 3, because you know what? Your guy, you may not be able to get your guy at 4, because we might make a move with somebody else. Oh, we might take him, but we might not take him. But even if we don't take him, we might trade him to somebody else that may take him ahead of you. Well, if you do that at 2, what do you think? Excuse me, at 3, what do you think number 2 is going to do? Washington, boy, let it be known that we're interviewing, doing our due diligence on Burrow and Tua. Of course they are. I just told you some of the reasons why you do your due diligence. But let me tell you why you not only do your due diligence, but you let everybody know that you're doing your due diligence. Because you want those calls to come through you. So now, if you are the Dolphins, and you love Tua, and you love Burrow, and you need a quarterback, you want one of those two. You know where you need to go to guarantee that you're going to get one of them? You got it, number 2. Because you could make a deal at number 2 between now and the next 4 weeks. You know why? Because if you're convinced at one point, and you make this trade once you've decided, make the trade from your standpoint, once you've decided that you would love either one of these two. Once you do that, you're guaranteed to get one of them at 2. But you can't move to 3 now. You can only discuss moving to 3 and then move to 3 when 3's on the clock. Because you move to 3, both of them might be gone. So your board dictates where you want to go, and your boards are not set yet. But the Redskins are putting out the signal saying, hey, you want to be assured of getting your quarterback? You need to come here. Because you know what? You don't want to talk with us? That's fine. We'll go talk to them, and we'll do a deal with them, and they get the quarterback over you. This is the way that you play the game, folks. This is how the stuff works. I think that they like Dwayne Haskins. I think they're going to go forward with Dwayne Haskins. I think they're going to stay at the number 2 pick and take Chase Young. But what if they get an offer? What if they get an opportunity to move down to 5? You know, what if somebody makes a double trade? What if they can move down a spot or 2, and maybe as much as they like Chase Young, they might like, and they've got a couple of good ones, but they might like a Derek Brown or a Kinlaw. You know, they could probably get them from at 5, one of them. You know, the point is not would you rather have Chase Young or that guy. The answer is would you rather have Chase Young or one of those other guys plus maybe 2 other guys. You work through all those scenarios, but at the very least, you want the calls to come to you so you have the options. You don't want to be sitting there where you've got your guy and there are other options there. What if something happens to Chase Young in this draft process? And I'm not talking a bad workout. I'm talking something really bad, just like we talked about with anybody just tragically could have it. All of a sudden, you know, the Redskins are in a prime candidate to trade for somebody wanting one of these quarterbacks. So you want to keep all options open from a trade standpoint. So when they say, we're looking and exercising all options, we're doing our due diligence, that's what they're really saying without telling you. They're doing their due diligence. They want to know about the players, but they also want to make people aware that they might be interested in taking that player, or we might be interested in the trade, and we'd look at the trade option and see if it's worth moving out, giving up Chase Young to move and get more picks, more quality players. All those things are in play, but they're not in play if your phone doesn't ring or if people know with 100% certainty that the Redskins are going to take Chase Young, then there's really not a whole lot of activity in terms of trade offers that's going to come to them. Well, in the end, the likelihood is the Redskins will stay and take Chase Young. But what if you get that offer that you just can't refuse? What if it's somebody that is as impactful as Chase Young, plus something else. You never know. And you never will know unless you work through the process. So I, having worked trades for years and years and still doing a lot of work for folks, you always encourage folks to keep their options open. You never know. Can tell you that Joe Burrow had his interview with the Bengals brass, coaches, and front office. It went as I expected. Just fantastic. Engaging, was great on the board, could describe and had a little bit of a film session, brief one, and again in the 15, 20 minutes. Just, you know, all the signs of everything you want to build your team around. So that went well. Let me address things about hand size and measurables and metrics. Here again, you take information and you put it in the hands of people that don't know what to do with it and understand it. It brings a lot of negative narratives about it. Hand size, arm length, speed, quickness, flexibility, height, weight, all these tangibles. How well you test in a score, on football IQ tests, on Wonderlic tests, psychological testing, all these metrics are relevant. They're all important. Where people get confused is that the results of any single one doesn't determine whether you take a guy or don't take a guy or how high or how low you take a guy. It's a metric that's relevant in the evaluation process. So, for example, Joe Burrow has 9-inch hands. That's not bad at all. It's not ideal. You'd like a minimum to be 9.5, but it doesn't mean that if you've got 9, that you can't be successful. But here's what it does mean. If you watch him play, he's incredibly accurate, anticipates. He's got a good arm. He doesn't have elite velocity. I mean, he's got, you know, 6'0 arm strength, not 6'5, not 6'9. You know, actually, I think he's between 6'0 and 6'4 velocity in his arm. And if he had 10.5-inch hands, he'd have more velocity because you can throw it with more velocity. The bigger your hands, it creates a little bit more grip on the football where you can have more control, and it does increase your velocity. It doesn't make him a good player. What makes him a good player are other things, which makes him successful or other things. All this does is show his hand size and show how that correlates from a metric standpoint to other players that have played in the league and who have struggled and who've had success. And there have been plenty of both. And there are plenty of reasons why guys have success or not have success other than just the height, the arm strength, the hand size. But those things are important. Hand size is important. Holding onto the ball in traffic. It's important in colder weather and wet weather when your hand shrinks naturally a little bit. It's important. It doesn't make you less effective, but it certainly makes you have to be aware and potentially overcome some of those things, but it can be overcome. So metrics at certain positions are important. Okay, they do not mean, because they're important, they do not mean they are the determining factor of whether a guy's going to be successful or not. Remember, the reason why they're metrics is because when you look at tape of a player and you scout him in college, you're seeing how well he does in college against college players. When you see guys in high school and you're projecting them to the college level, you're seeing how well they do it in high school, not against college guys. You're projecting. That's what scouting is, projecting how they're likely going to do at the next level. You can't try it before you buy it. Okay, you've got to be, that's pro personnel scouting, where you see what guys are already doing in the league. Projecting guys, it's how they're going to likely do at the next level. So looking at a speed splits, looking at arm length and hand size and explosion off the vertical and broad jump are great indicators of translating to the next level, height, weight, what have you, because there's comparative measures, but it's only to compare that one thing. There's a myriad of things that we look at. And very often you can overcome a deficiency in one area because you're and it got enhanced qualities in others. Drew Brees was height deficient. Well, what does that really mean? Well, it means that he's going to struggle in the pocket if he can't get enough depth to see the field. Well, that's true. So what has he done throughout his career? A Hall of Fame career, by the way. He, A, explodes from under center, gets into deeper drops. He gets into nine-step drops as quick or quicker than guys that get into seven-step drops. And he gets on his toes, and he throws it with a high release point off of his toes with velocity, with big – he can overcome it. Big hands, by the way. He's got bigger hands than you would think for a guy that height. So does Russell Wilson, by the way. He's got 10.5-inch hands for a guy that's not even 6 feet. Okay, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, they're different, but they're both short. They both overcome it. The being height deficient or having smaller hands doesn't mean you can't play. It just means that you're going to have to adjust to some other things. And quite frankly, you probably already have adjusted to that metric thus far. But it's an indicator of one thing, one of many. If you got a whole bunch of things that you are deficient at, that's where it becomes problematic. There's a reason why you don't have guys with 8-inch hands play football in the NFL quarterback. How many of them you've had? Not many. Very few at all. Most of them don't make it because of a lot of things, not just hand size. Hand size is not going to make or break a player. Maybe lack of hand size, maybe lack of height, maybe lack of velocity, maybe some other things. That starts to accumulate, then you got a problem. Then you got more issues. But you can overcome a lot. There are no perfect players. Never has been, never will be. But the closer you can get physically, the less you need to become heightened in some of the other areas. I've learned that sometimes if a guy is a little bit deficient in one area, it heightens his senses in others. You've heard this story, and I don't know if it's true or not, but that people who are blind have a heightened sense of hearing, or people who are deaf have a heightened sense of vision. I don't know if that's true. I've heard that. I do believe that that sometimes is a learned skill in football, that necessity is the motherhood of invention. So if you have a deficiency, you can become heightened in your skills in other areas to overcome it, and you often do and learn it, and it comes about into a very productive result because you're able to do it. So remember, you've got if you're looking at an offensive lineman, a guy like a Jake Matthews, who, by the way, graded out very well for the Falcons this year, a little short-armed. Ideally not what you want at left tackle arm length-wise, but he's got really quick feet, so he's been able to overcome it. You take Jake Matthews, and if he doesn't have good feet and he's got short arms, he can get spun over like a top because, you know, defenders are going to get under his pads and they're going to cross his face and it's going to become an issue for him. So, you know, those metrics do pan out, but they pan out as it relates to that specific metric, to that specific position, but it doesn't accumulate all the other metrics. So if you're talking about, you know, a quarterback, yeah, you can talk about hand size, you can talk about arm length, you can talk about height, you can talk about weight, you can talk about foot quickness, but the agility, you can talk about accuracy, you can talk about IQ, all a myriad of things, and go on and on and on. I guarantee you nobody's going to grade out at the highest level in all of those things. So you got to keep that in perspective. It does not mean it's not important. It is, okay? It's all important. And when you put it all together, if you've only got one or two deficient areas that can be overcome, you're fine. If you are deficient in multiple areas, it's going to be tougher to overcome. So understanding the information, knowing how to interpret the information is king. And what we have, unfortunately, in today's world is a reactionary media, is a complete misunderstanding of football at the highest level and understanding how to evaluate, understanding how to coach, what you're looking for, and how to create the result. Most people can sit down and eat the meal. Not many people can cook it quite as well. What we're trying to do as personnel people is we can cook it and know how to do it, how to alter it, how to maneuver the ingredients so that the meal can look real good. And so, look, it's a learned process over time, and the metrics have borne out over time that it pretty much tells you whether a guy is going to make it or not in that particular area. And then you got to move to the next metric and the next and the next. And you put all that together. Remember, the combine is about metrics. It's about measurement, tangibles. And that only measures physical skill sets. It doesn't tell you how good a football player he is. How good a football player he is, you go to the film. The film will tell you that. But the film doesn't tell you, the production or lack thereof doesn't tell you necessarily how good they're going to be at the next level. The metrics, the workouts combined with the film will tell you more than likely of a guy, how a guy will project to the next level or not. Then you have to factor in a lot of other things, psychological, mental, health, motivation. How great do they want to be? You may have everything you need. You know, people usually refer to it as heart. Some guys are good enough and are comfortable enough to make it, but they may not have the desire to be the best. You know, it's just the way it is. It's just kind of how things work for some folks. So, you know, I think you got to look at all of these things and understand all of these things, that it's like a puzzle, and putting together all the pieces of the puzzle are critical to getting the whole thing in play. So understand that as you watch the combine, this is about physical metrics, and 90% of the time, the physical metrics match up the film. It's when the 10% of the time the film doesn't match the workout that you need to do more work to be able to figure out what's the difference. I can tell you a story about Carl Nix. Came out of Nebraska years ago. He was an offense 6-round pick. He had very poor film. Didn't play very well. Played high. Got moved out the line to the scrimmage a great deal. He looked very unathletic on tape. Goes to the combine. He's one of the more flexible linemen there. His explosive numbers, his vertical jump and broad jump were great. Well, that's a red flag. The film doesn't match the workout. The workout's much better. What's the problem? Well, you go and study more. There's some other issues, maybe some technique issues as a player, some maybe a little bit of a hearing issue where he often tilted his head, cocked his head before the snap to hear any adjustments, and that got his pad level a little bit higher. So he wasn't as good blocking. Now, he got away with it because he was physically strong and he had decent tape at times, but oftentimes he got moved out pretty effectively. You're watching tape, you think this guy's a dog. This guy doesn't play hard. You get to know him, you study him, you realize he's not a dog. He works hard. He does all those things. So what's the – well, you do the work and you realize this guy's really explosive. You figured out why he's playing high, why he's cocking his head. All of a sudden, you correct those things, and you know what you got as a 6-round pick that most people didn't like on film? You got the best guard in football for about 3 years. He was an all-pro with the Saints, big part of their offensive line success when they won the Super Bowl. He gets paid the highest contract that a guard's ever had at that time by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Unfortunately, was contracted with the MRSA infection that ended his career. But the whole point was, and that's just one example of a myriad of ones I could go through, that you need to be thorough and marry the film to the workout. If the workouts, if the metrics weren't important, we wouldn't be wasting our time or anybody else's time doing it. Because you don't understand it, recognize you don't need to understand it. The media doesn't need to understand it. It's not for them to decide. It's not for them to evaluate. That's not their qualification. That's not their credentials. What I'm trying to do is to explain the reason why we do it and the fact that it does matter, but it does not matter in some of the ways that the media will portray. It does not the be all to end all. Again, it only helps to define one certain factor. It's like a page in a book. A page, one page may be better than the other, and then you got 12 chapters. It's a metric that is used that's a good indicator in that particular area of a player's potential for success. But so are a myriad of other things. And when you pull all that together, you can get a good feel for what a guy is or a guy isn't and what a guy is most likely to be on to the next level. So hopefully that gives you an idea and an understanding of what's important, why it's important, why we look at it. But don't be fooled by the talking heads that tell you what it means, what it should mean. This doesn't matter, and this is ridiculous. Well, sure, it's ridiculous. What's ridiculous is you talking. What's ridiculous is, you know, the opinion that this is going to mean this or that. But remember, the media today is about clicks. It's about creating an environment of let's have a hot take today so we can move the needle. Well, you know, what we try to do in football is to try to make good, prudent decisions and not try to move the needle, but we try to make good football decisions. And anytime you're dealing with human beings, evaluating human beings, you're going to have mistakes that are made. But if you can reduce the potential for those mistakes by taking certain metrics and marrying them up and seeing what the potential growth is of a player as a football player, not just physical growth, and then look at the film and make those judgments, the better you're able to do that, the better you're able to have success in the draft, in any evaluation process, in any profession, quite frankly, but in this case, in football. Hey, we appreciate you joining us. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy the combine if you're inclined to watch it. But again, understand that very often you're going to get information that maybe is going to lead you down the wrong path, but at least it's something that hopefully is entertaining. And again, if you got any questions, we'll be glad to address it here. On any of the platforms, go to LandryFootball.com and hit contact Chris, and we will address it. Check out LandryFootball.com. We highly encourage you to spread the word about this podcast, but also combine this podcast with a membership to LandryFootball.com, where we get you not only all the inside information, but the film room breakdowns of the college and pro game that's so essential to understanding and seeing the game at a different level. We got our best discount offer ever. It's our scouting season offer, less than $5 a month. So take advantage of it today. It's a great tool to have. It's a great time of year. You get the free agent boards, the free agent scouting reports, the draft boards, the draft scouting reports. We're going to have all that for you between now and the draft, as well as all the breakdowns of all the team needs and where they're headed. Obviously, during the season, all the game breakdowns, recruiting at the college level, we got it for you. One-stop shopping football over at LandryFootball.com. So check that out, and be sure to check us out on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast next week, right here on the Landry Football Podcast. I'm Chris Landry. Have a great one, everybody.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at Landry Football. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com. LandryFootball.com.